Nobody else at that level, at that high political level, was too concerned about it. And so I had to keep pushing to get some focus of attention to that. Because I could see that given the rise, the projected rise in sea level of about a meter, really is serious for us. Maybe not serious for countries with mountains, but we don't have mountains. And so we had to, for me, it was a rush to try and get an urgent attention, a focus of attention on the situation that we would be facing in the future. In terms of what we are experiencing, we, over the years, we've been experiencing storms, very minor storms, because we're outside of the hurricane, the cyclone belt. But the tides and what have you, and over the years, as you mentioned in your opening statement, there's a village that visited as a small child, and it's no longer there. What is left of that village is a church sitting in the middle of the ocean to see when the tide comes in. The village has relocated.
President Tong, you're here in the United States, where the president of the United States, President Trump, has called climate change a Chinese hoax. Your response to him, and what message do you have, president to president?
Well, I think it's, I don't know. I'm reading the science, which is coming forward. I have no other information to indicate otherwise. And so for me, when it's a matter of survival for our people, especially the future generation, even a remote possibility, even a 5% possibility that it is not a hoax, I think has got to be taken seriously. I think it's important. It's too important to speculate that it may or may not happen. If it, as I say, if there is a 5% possibility that it might happen, then we should begin to take measures from now, because we understand how vulnerable we are. And I think given what's coming forward, the knowledge that is coming forward on the science of climate change, we know what's causing it. We think we know what's causing it. It's being denied by, no doubt, the interests which I believe are being threatened by all of this. But here we are. And I've often been in discussions with other leaders who argue before, leading up to the Paris Agreement, they argue that a 2-degree rise in temperature was too a delimitation. It would be too damaging for their economy.
We are going to have to leave it there. 5 seconds, final thought.
Okay, for us, it's a matter of survival.
A matter of survival. Anote Tong, former president of Kiribati, and Matthew Reitz, director of Notes Arc. And this note, the 2018 Oscar nominations have just been announced. Among the top nominees, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, The Shape of Water, Dunkirk, and Mudbound. The nominees for Best Documentary, Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, which tells the story of the only U.S. bank prosecuted in relation to the 2008 financial crisis. Faces, Places by French documentary filmmaker Agnès Varda Jr., Icarus, as well as Last Men in Aleppo and Strawn Island, which recounts the murder of the director's brother in the judicial system that allowed his killer to go free. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from Park City, Utah.
Hi, this is Montel Williams for the Humane Society of the United States. They're playful and affectionate, aloof and mysterious. They're also the most frequent occupants of America's animal shelters, where millions end up each year. They're cats. America's most popular pets, but also the pet most likely to die prematurely from disease, poison, animal abuse, and collision with vehicles, because many people let their cats roam freely. To protect your cats from harm, please keep them indoors. A safe cat is a happy cat.
Well, this is who I am, this is what I am, and I can be the best of who I am, and I am somebody. I'm a person with retardation, but I can be the best person with retardation. Well, I wanted one thing. I wanted to be an athlete. And Special Olympics gave me that opportunity. My dream became reality.
There are many children and adults with mental retardation, like Loretta, right here in this community, who can benefit from year-round sports training and competition. But they need your help. Inspire greatness. Support your local Special Olympics program.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you tonight, joined by Kyle.
Hey, everyone.
We're in Brussels, Belgium. But that's irrelevant because we're not going to be talking about Brussels. And by the time you hear this, we'll be in Iceland. But that's also irrelevant. We're not going to be talking about Iceland because we're not there yet. And the show that we're supposedly recording in Iceland won't air until the future.
But fear not. We will record our second trip to Iceland, and we will air it at some point.
We presume we'll do that. We can't speak for the future. It's possible we won't record anything. Who knows? We might get a flat tire and not be in a good mood.
Or there may be no future.
You see, we're talking about Iceland. We're talking about the future. We're not supposed to be doing that. We're in Brussels, but again, as I told you, that's not relevant. What relevant is where we left off last time. Last time we spoke, we were in Moldova.
Yes, the wonderful, interesting city of Kisnau.
I say Kisnau because I don't know. I just feel like that's right, but I don't know because we don't know anybody from Moldova. Well, except for the people we met while we were there. But honestly, I don't know anybody who's been to Moldova.
I don't know anyone at all either who has ventured into this interesting place. I had a good time there, though.
I had a great time. It was really something. I know you had issues with the air quality, as did I.
Yeah, it was similar to some of the experience I'd had in Hungary and some of the places east where they just have different standards. And some of these cities are really busy. They've got a lot of old cars and a lot of reasons why. But it's different, and you have to kind of, I guess, adjust or just be aware that, you know, you're going to be breathing and amongst the kinds of ground level pollution that it might irritate you a little bit mentally and physically.
Well, they use a lot of coal there, and that's something that I think we really should address because there's a lot of talk about coal in our country. And when you go to a place like Moldova where they are using coal pretty aggressively, it makes you realize how stupid it is for anyone to push to bring back coal if you've moved beyond that.
Yeah, it's the number of factors, the density of vehicles, but also this thing with coal power plants. And just, I think, briefly, what I read is there's a very large facility, but it only does maybe 80%, but there are other plants and smokestacks around the city of Kisnau that are just really, really close to the city. So at nighttime, when people are cooking food and doing stuff, you notice a difference. And so there was a lot of fog, smog, and that kind of visible air quality that just added to, I think, some you know, discomfort. And it was also cold, so you could see your breath, and you'd see smoke everywhere, and then, you know, diesel vehicles and everything. You really got the sense that you know, this was a rough climate, a tough town. You know, people doing what they can, and the thing is, these facilities, sometimes they can burn other things, but coal's really inexpensive and it's abundant in that area, and so to switch to gas or something that may be a little cleaner burning, not have as much soot, that's the fine and even larger particulates, it's costly, and then they may not have the same particulate filters and scrubbing technologies that we used to enforce when we had an EPA.
Well, if Moldova happens to join the EU, which I know they want to do, most certainly the regulations would move them into a less polluting environment, and that would be a good thing.
Yeah, you'd have new cars have to meet certain standards, and also you'd have new cars. You know, you'd have access to that market, so you'd get manufacturers offering things that are cleaner, and maybe the economics would change such that people there could then buy new cars.
Yes, definitely. One thing we noticed in Moldova is that people are really trying hard, working hard, and I think they deserve to be part of the world community, to have people visit them. For them to be a part of any unions of nations, that would basically give them more recognition and more resources. It's a pretty amazing place, and I'd like to see it grow.
Yeah, it's true. Right away when we got there, we noticed certain things about the transport. We noticed immediately and thought it interesting that the air quality at the station was really, really bad. And we think it had something to do with the trains, but it wasn't really clear. I mean, obviously diesel trains have some kind of exhaust, and it just seemed a little thicker, but we couldn't really put our finger on it. So when we were leaving, it was really, really smoky and dark, again, because I think at the night and late evening hour, people are tending to cook and use a lot more electricity. So the smokestacks nearest town tend to gear up to support everybody when they come home from work. And it was particularly smoky when we left Moldova. We went to the station. We used the machines there, had some coffees, and eventually the train arrived.
Can we talk about the... we went to a typical Moldovan place before we left for lunch that day. Remember? It was kind of like a diner. It was huge. There were like 100 people there. And we had just all these traditional dishes, which I don't remember the name of any of them.
Yeah, I was a little reluctant at first. It felt maybe kind of like a touristy spot or something, or like a chain. But once we got in, it was definitely kind of a lunch spot, and the prices reflected that. I think you got something that was like a combination that was really, really traditional and just a lot of variety. I picked a couple different items from the menu and ate everything. It was delicious and really, really, really reasonably priced. I mean, of course, everything in Moldova ended up being really affordable, but this was kind of interesting and just, it just felt like we were amongst people and the sort of a local lunchtime crowd.
Yeah, it was cool. And of course, you always have this bit of awkwardness when it's over because you don't know if you're supposed to tip or how much or can you add it to the bill after they give you the bill. But I think in pretty much all the cases, we were able to at least try. Sometimes they say, no, you can't add it, and that's the end of it if you don't have more cash to give them. But we stumbled through it, and sometimes it was awkward, sometimes it was smooth. But I think we really got the true experience in Moldova, arriving on Christmas and just kind of hanging out with the locals and going to a variety of places. We wound up going to a bar right before we left for the train, one we found by accident because we were looking for an Uzbek place, and instead we wound up going down these steps and we were in what was the equivalent of a dive bar. Basically, you saw a picture of a guy with a beard and sunglasses, and we were wondering, who is this guy? Why is he on all their signs? And then we saw a guy with sunglasses and a beard walking through there. It was the owner. So he had his face on all the literature. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was called Bar Bar.
It was called Bar Bar, wasn't it? I didn't know what that meant. I thought the person's name was Bar Bar. I don't know what Moldovan names are like. But anyway, so we did that. And then since we knew how the buses worked, we got on the bus, paid our 6-cent fare or whatever it was, and made our way to the train station. Plenty of time to get on our train. Which was going through to Moscow. We were only going as far as Kiev. Now, I discovered that around this time, looking at my train book, which, by the way, the train book that I have is a lifesaver. It's called the European Rail Timetable. It publishes out of England. It used to be published by Thomas Cook, and they announced years ago they were going to stop publishing it. And the people who worked for it said, you know what, we're going to continue because this is just so important. And I'm very, very glad they did. This book has saved our asses so many times because oftentimes you can't find a good schedule. You may try to connect online, but sometimes you can't do that. And having a book with all the schedules in front of you is just, it's a godsend.
I actually started learning it this time. I started helping and plotting things out. And even on this next leg, I had been able to help look at things while you were trying to do other things. And it's a good... sort of constant to a reference you can always have and always compare to what's around you and what you're not able to do online or through their site or what is on a reader board or not or what someone's telling you at a ticket counter. And it's not as hard to use as I thought. It's tricky. There's page numbers. There's table numbers. There's codes and all these things. But once you kind of take interest and you start putting how it works together in the scenario of figuring out a line, you can actually get a lot of information way ahead of when you're confronted with a decision-making moment.
And people will come up to you and ask you questions, and you'll become the expert. The biggest challenge I had was reading the microscopic print. In fact, back in Leipzig, I had to buy a pair of glasses so I could read it without having to take pictures of it and blow it up. But anyway, so that book is what told me when we were going to the Kiznau train station on our way to Kiev. I looked at our train a little bit more carefully, and I realized... And I hadn't realized this before, that our train was actually making a couple of stops in that disputed territory of Moldova.
Transnistria.
Yeah, or something like that. They basically kind of broke away from Moldova, and I think they became part of... Well, they didn't become part of Ukraine. They became their own thing, but I think they're more into being part of Ukraine, but they also might be more into being part of Russia. I'm not really sure. I didn't do my research on this. It's very complicated, as you may have heard last week. But what concerned me was, it's the opposite direction of where Kiev was, so I had no clue that the train was going to go in that direction. And it also kind of explained why some trains were going to Kiev that would leave before our train and get there well after our train got there. So that didn't make any sense. Apparently, the track is high speed if it goes the wrong way. If it goes south to go north, it makes a turn at some point after going through the disputed territory and then is high speed. So that's how it gets ahead of the train that left before it. So that was something I learned just by looking at that book. And it was a little bit disconcerting because we didn't know what that meant. We heard that they have passport control in the disputed territory. They have their own currency. So we were a little concerned about that.
The book and other resources did tell us, though, that it was very clearly not a problem for people with both EU and American documents, which we have both of. And, it was odd also because of the train itself being Russian and all of that just added another factor. It's very interesting the way these things unfold. We looked at just the sort of subtle details of it. Maybe if our listeners know anything about this, they could write in and tell us what they've found, because there's all kinds of these little regionalisms and groups and political things that become even whole micro-republics that are, as we learned, only recognized by other ones, and all of this sort of interesting geopolitical nuance that it just sort of falls in your lap. You have to figure it out. You have to make sure you're going to be okay. And thankfully, we were able to just basically pass through the area and with no trouble on this route.
Yeah, we're worried about maybe saying the wrong thing to a border guard or to the two people that we knew we'd be traveling with, who were complete strangers on the train from Moldova into Ukraine. Maybe they're going on to Russia. Maybe they have certain political views. Maybe they're part of this breakaway republic. We didn't know. So we were concerned about that. And so we made it to the train station. We were waiting there for about an hour or so, which was, we got there an hour early, so we expected to do that. We basically got on the train without incident, right? It showed up when it was supposed to. And, you go to the place, your car, your particular car you have to get on. You show your ticket to the train agent who's standing there. Every car has a different train agent that stands there. And he looks at your ticket, and then he asks to see your passport. And then he takes your ticket, and you don't get it back. You get sent to your room, assuming you have a room. That's really the last you see of your ticket. And at that point, you're on the train, and he knows you're on the train. So you don't have to show the ticket to anybody else. You have to show your passport if you cross the border. But that's pretty much it. So we were sitting there waiting for the people to come on board. And they didn't.
Yeah, we didn't get neighbors. They didn't show up.
So this time we were told to expect people. We were expecting people, and we were disappointed because there were no people. We had the car to ourselves this time, which is what we wanted the first time when we had four people that we weren't expecting. So when you travel, the unexpected always happens.
Yeah. One thing I would add is sometimes your attendant, in fact, a lot of the time, they will give you some sense of the schedule, what to expect. And I think in this case, we were to expect a border check at night or very, very early in the morning. And I think he advised us just sort of generally that, you know, it would be occurring. But I don't think he gave us the exact time. We had to kind of figure it out from the schedule. And we had basically a couple hours to sleep, and then we were ready to be up.
Yeah, and I didn't know if we were going to get stopped at that breakaway republic because, you know, I was told that they have their own border patrol and all that. So I was kind of half expecting that, but as it turned out, we only got stopped when we crossed into Ukraine. And that went fairly uneventfully. You know, the usual questions weren't you asked a question, do you speak Russian or something, by the Ukrainian guard?
You're right. Yes, that was, remembering that now, I was very...
Why did he ask you that?
Specifically asked, do you speak Russian? And I said, no.
And thank God you said that, because you had some wiseacre remarks stored in your head, ready to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, nyet. But that's not really cool. Don't joke around with border guards.
No, you'd still be there now, probably. We went through that, pretty uneventful. Asked us if we were traveling through on business, pleasure, whatever. So we basically said, no, our plan is to go to Kiev, and then from Kiev go to Warsaw, and then Berlin after that, because that's where we had our train connection to London, which, since we're talking to you now from Brussels, you can sort of figure out that we made that connection. But spoilers aside, we made our way into Ukraine. We got there the following morning on schedule.
Yeah, it was interesting, I think, very early arrival for us. And basically, we had to sort out the next leg of that journey because we did have a booking, but we weren't booked all the way through. These were moments when we had an idea of when to get the train, but we hadn't had any chance or way to do that in advance. We had to play it by ear once we got there.
Yeah, when you say we had a booking in Berlin, but we were still in Kiev, so we had to get from Kiev to Berlin to make our booking, which was, you know, it was a good amount of time. It was almost a full week, but still, you know, we're pretty far east. So we needed to make sure that we could get there. And as is our habit, when we arrive someplace, we try to figure out how to leave immediately so that we know, you know, okay, when is our ticket? Where's the train station? Where's the track that we would go to? So we have it all down. So first thing we did was find the ticket hall. And boy, they have a massive ticket hall. They had two massive ticket halls. And I had to go to one on the other side of the train station to find out the number of the ticket station on the other side that I had to go to get an international ticket. It was very complicated and confusing. And fortunately, I have an app on my phone that you can point, you know, it's a translate app, which it's like science fiction, really, but it's becoming commonplace. You basically, it's like you're taking a picture of something in a foreign language, and in front of your eyes, it just translates it into English. So I did that to find out what window I had to stand at for international tickets.
And there wasn't a seat in this place. I was actually standing in an area watching bags while you went off to find this stuff. And basically you reported back after having done that and were able to tell me that we didn't really have a way to do this here because I guess you had talked to someone at that point?
No, I went to one of those windows that had a sign. It said international, but it had a sign on it. And I took my translate picture of that, and it said to go to window 24. I don't know why I remember it was window 24. But I had to go back to window 24, which was on the side that you were waiting on. The other hall, I called the dim hall because they for some reason didn't have lights on and everybody was kind of just sitting around doing nothing, passengers that is. staff too.
No seat.
No seats, no, because everybody was sitting around doing nothing, and there were no seats. So we went back and waited on line 24 for a little while, asked if she spoke English. Not really, no, very, very little. So, okay, you do the best you can. So you say, Warsaw. And, you know, she knows what Warsaw is. That, you know, the city name is familiar. And we would like to have gotten onto the train that afternoon, because we knew there was a train, thanks to the book, we knew there was a train that afternoon. But, you know, we expected, okay, maybe we have to stay in Kiev one day, that's fine too. So she looks and says, nope, not today, full, you know. And I said, okay, how about tomorrow? Nope. And that's when I started saying, uh-oh, this could be an issue. So when is the next train to Warsaw? And she just keeps going through a schedule, and she says, Monday, Monday the 15th. Today is Monday the 15th. We're in Brussels. You can see that that would have been a major problem for us to be in Kiev until Monday the 15th. That wasn't going
to
work.
Yeah, that would completely disrupt our connection for a booking that we do have.
Yeah, we wouldn't have made that connection. So, you know, basically in situations like that, you kind of go up against a brick wall because there was no alternative. We couldn't speak the language. So we couldn't say, what else do you suggest? And she didn't really seem interested in suggesting anything anyway. Basically, that's it. You can't do this until next week. And, you know, you kind of have to withdraw at that point, lick your wounds, and figure out what to do next.
Yeah, and we had had very, you know, kind of rustic accommodations the night before. Not a lot of breakfast or coffee or anything. So at this point, in this massively busy station with really no place to sit down, no place to collect yourself or get online or anything, we started walking. We had to get away from there. We tried to go into a McDonald's at one point just to steal Wi-Fi and sit down. No seats, absolute, you know, a massive feeding frenzy in
there. Ukraine, the land of no seats.
It was impossible. There's taxis everywhere. There's little bazaars and flea markets and women selling, you know, fruits and meats and stuff on the side of the sidewalk. A huge bus terminal. We basically walked and kept walking into town.
Yeah, we still didn't have any currency, so we just wanted to use a credit card, get a quick snack, and figure out how the hell to get out of this place so that we could, you know, move west and be close to where the train that we had to get on the 15th was. So basically we went to a cafe, did exactly that, hopped online, did all kinds of things. It's really cool. People are very, very helpful, even with a small smattering of the same language. So we were able to replenish ourselves, rejuvenate. And that's when I discovered that there was another office for the train company, which was fairly nearby. It was next to a hotel. It seemed bizarre. I didn't want to go back to the train station because that was just like, it was hell. It was literal hell. But maybe this hotel would be a little bit better. So we walked around a little bit, found the hotel, and okay, there's the hotel. Where's the train place? And you were able to find a door. And we opened up the door. It was really bizarre because you open the door to what looks like a hotel, but then suddenly you're in the train station environment because there's people on lines, there's arguments going on. You know, there's always a guy in Eastern Europe, there's always a guy at the window who's leaning on his elbow, and you can tell he's been there a while and he plans on staying there a while because he's having a conversation, dispute, argument, debate, whatever, with the person behind the window. And that is what you see going on at about maybe five or six windows in that place, in the middle of town. Not the train station, but they're acting like the train station, and they're selling train tickets. So we figured, okay, let's give this another go. Let's ask these people. Maybe we'll have more luck. So basically, I asked at an information window, what I thought was an information window, where I could go. I got nothing. Basically, the person just shook her head, didn't answer, you know, didn't speak English. I was like, international, you know, wouldn't tell me anything. So I started waiting on another line, which is, you know, four or five people, all of whom were having arguments. And then I asked you, maybe you could wait on a line on the other side of the room. That way we're killing two birds with one stone. How did that go?
Awful. I stood there. I lost my nerve. She talked me down. Basically, I was in the quicker of the lines. You had the quintessentially endless booking that never stopped of guys standing with family, whatever they were doing, who knows how many connections they were. They were probably buying every train they could, but you were stuck in that. I actually got up to the window, but as soon as I said English or you know, asked for international, she just said, no, and shooed me off. And I forgot to ask, starting with the location, which is what you told me to do, but I just completely got flustered. And then I came running back over to your line, throwing my hands up, because it just seemed so impossible.
I thought she threw her hands up. Didn't she flail her arms about in frustration when you said something she didn't understand?
Absolutely, and that's where do you think I got it from?
Okay, so you basically sent that message over to me, who was still waiting on the other line. And I was able to get out of that person on that line, which was the wrong line, eventually, that I had to stand at the window that you were at, the very one that you had just gone to. So we went back over to that side of the room, waited on another line, got to that person, and I basically, at that point, I think we had an alternative plan. We weren't going to try for Warsaw anymore because we knew that wasn't going to work. So basically, we just tried to go international.
Yeah, you had the benefit of visual aids. I didn't have a book. I didn't have the tables, which you had been photographing, which is also really helpful to show them with your phone. But I had done research. This is something I mentioned earlier. I had researched an alternate route in case we couldn't get through this. And I think the city was Lviv.
Yeah, Lviv was close to the border of Ukraine and Poland. And the plan was we get a ticket to Lviv, stay there overnight, and then take a local train across the border to a Polish city, and then from that Polish city get an intercity train to either Krakow or Wrocław. And then that's within distance of Berlin, so at least we know that we would be able to make that. So anyway, long story short, we had this extended conversation with the person behind the window in very broken, no language at all. We were just basically trying to get a ticket to Lviv. We knew what time the train was because we had the books. So we were able to say at this time. She was able to look up that time and confirm there was a train. And just when we were able to get that ticket to that city, I think we all kind of shared a moment there. The ticket agent, you and me, and in fact, people in the station, because they helped us.
Yeah,
there was one guy there who spoke English.
Absolutely, yeah, a guy right next to us. He had basically translated, verifying certain things. She needed to see our passports, and she was hand typing our names in and was confused about my name. Without getting into details, I had to make sure it was correct.
Yes. And there was that. She wanted to know two tickets, first class, second class. You know, we decided, what the hell, let's go first class, because we deserve that after all we've been through. Maybe we get a little bit more extra space. Maybe, you know, we can put our bags somewhere and not have to worry about somebody moving them. Maybe we'll even get an AC plug. Who knows? And we wound up getting two first class tickets from Kiev to Lviv. It cost us a whopping $32 or something like that for two people, which was really awesome. And we knew we had a train that day. And that was such a triumph. That we hadn't gotten out of the country, but we had gotten a lot closer to the border and kind of defeated the system that told us we couldn't do anything.
Yeah, that sort of, oh, you're not a native, I'm not going to help you.
Oh, no, natives too. They just got the same attitude. They just could understand.
Yeah, taking a stand, fighting, even, you know, despite those odds, we were able to do this. And we had a celebratory snack and basically prepared to take this train to Lviv.
And we did. We got on the train, took the train to Lviv, we wound up basically staying in a... Oh, that was a weird place. That was a place where, okay, we had our map app on our phones, and it seemed to be telling us to, after we got off the train, to walk along the tracks, and we couldn't figure out what in God's name it wanted us to do. But I was really kind of scared by all this, and we had to go down this really dark path over a pedestrian overpass. And I mean, I'm impressed that it knew the way to get there, but it was a good 15-minute walk along back alleys and dark streets.
Yeah, we had by this time, during that ride to Lviv, we came in at night, and we had this accommodation. The station itself was very, very dark that night, and we were able to buy the ticket immediately.
No. Hold on a second. I forgot something here. We got off the train, and yeah, we saw the station. The station kept getting bigger and bigger. We kept finding these rooms, and they were all filled with people. Now, it was late at night. It was like midnight. But there were all these people, and they all seemed to be waiting, and they all seemed to be waiting for a very, very long time. I don't know what they were waiting for, but we knew that we had to find a ticket the next day to get to that city in Poland. And, you know, I thought there'd be lots of trains because it's a fairly short distance. We're talking maybe 30 miles. So we basically kept wandering around the station, finding all these new cathedral-type rooms filled with people until we found the window that actually sold international tickets. And that's where we had another setback, because we talked to the woman behind that counter, and she said, no trains. And I'm like, oh, my God, we just have come all this way to get to this other city in Ukraine, and now we have somebody else telling us there's no way we can get across the border. You know, and that's... Hi. Sorry, we're busy. Thank you. All right, go ahead. All right, well, I guess we should explain what happened. We were talking about Ukraine and this drunk Belgian woman accosted us and wouldn't let us alone, so we had to stop recording in the train station in Brussels. And well, now we're in Iceland. So we got very distracted. We went through England, had a lot of fun in England. We'll talk about that next week when we're live in the studio, I think would be appropriate. Let's continue our story. We're not going to talk about Iceland at all, because that will air at a future date, because we haven't yet had our Iceland adventure. We're about to, but we're currently standing outside. It's freezing cold. There's snow everywhere. And that'll help us finish the story quickly, I hope.
Yeah, the sun's going down, too. And I'll say it's actually 2 p.m. Well, and the sun's going down.
Let me debate you on that, because the sun actually just came up.
Okay, no, you make a good point. What I'm saying is that it's not in the sky where you'd think it is. It's definitely on the horizon.
Right, which is where it is when it rises. I'm not sure what the confusion is.
Well, it's only going to rise for so long, and now it's basically going to go away.
Okay, well, I'm glad you came around and agree that the sun has just risen.
And here we are, a beautiful Icelandic sunset.
Right. All right, you know what? Let's get back to the Ukraine, where things are a little bit more peaceful. So we were in Lviv, right? We had just arrived at this bizarre, weird train station with all these cathedral rooms crowded with people that were waiting, and we didn't know what was going on. It was a very strange environment. But we went directly to the international window. Well, actually, not directly. We eventually found it. It was the typical Eastern European train station interaction, where you ask for something and you basically told no, you cannot have that. The person is there to sell train tickets. That's all they're there to do, and they're also there to tell you that they can't do that. So
yeah, it's a weird dance, and you know, it's not always easy to even find them in the first place. They have colleagues that either can or won't, they can help you but won't, or whatever other sort of busyness that's keeping them from addressing your requests. But when you do find them, it's a tricky dance. You have to convince them of what they're able to do and what you know of the system and the capabilities.
So this conversation kind of went like this. We walked up to her, and we had the name of the Polish town. There's a Polish town over the border. We just wanted to get out of Ukraine. Not because we didn't like Ukraine, we just had to get to our Berlin train, which was already booked, the one that went all the way to London. Well, actually, that's three trains, but that's another story. We needed to make it by a certain time, a certain day, and back in Kiev, they had told us we'd have to wait till next week to make it just to Warsaw. So if we were able to get over the border to this small Polish border town, then we could make it to the rest of Poland and hopefully into Berlin. That was our thinking. So do you have the name of that that Polish town handy? Do you know what it is?
It's a really, I don't know how to pronounce it. It starts with a PZ. It's Przemysl.
And they all start with PZ over there.
There's some accents. I don't know where the emphasis is, but it's Przemysl. It's right. Przemysl.
A lot of syllables, a lot of consonants, and letters that should never be joined together.
Like R's and...
But, okay, so in Lviv, we went over and we said that. We showed it to her, maybe. I forget exactly what we did.
I think you used your technique of photographing the destination, zooming in on it with your...
Yes, my train book again. I took a picture of the train book and zoomed in and said, this is where we want to go. And she said, no. No trains. And then that conversation somehow changed to no trains, except for the 8 o'clock train. 8 o'clock in the morning train. No, I thought there were three trains. I thought there were three trains during the whole day. I still think there might be. But she said... 8 a.m.
Which we wanted to verify, and we had an idea of maybe three trains or three options, but what she was saying didn't even jive with the one option that was in the ballpark.
Yeah, well, it didn't even jive with what she was saying, because she said 8 a.m. train, and that train was actually at 7:50. So you never tell somebody a train is leaving after it leaves. If anything, you give them a little extra time. You say the 7:30 train when it's 7:50. But she said 8 a.m., and I happened to notice that it's 7:50. A little bit different, but whatever. And then she said only cash. For some reason, even though her window said she took credit card, she only took cash.
Yeah.
My God. That airplane just flew right over our heads.
Yeah, there's a flight path that goes right over Reykjavik.
Well, I didn't know that. You knew that?
Yeah, I did.
Thanks for sharing.
Well, I just, you know, I wanted it to be dramatic. But,
okay, all right.
But yeah, she was practically resting her elbow on a credit card machine, but shaking her head and saying cash only.
She brushed it aside and it knocked over onto the floor. It's no credit card, only cash. I think she had some kind of a scam going there. I really do.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But given the rates and whatnot, she had used a calculator to give us an idea of the total, which is quite common when you don't speak the same language. The numbers are indecipherable.
And it was about $30 or something like that, but we didn't have cash. So you had to go to an ATM, take some cash out from your account, and we ran back, because I was afraid it was going to close. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I was amazed she was even there in the first place. So ran back over there within 5 minutes with all this cash, paid her, got tickets. Then we had to find the hotel, which was that long, scary walk down the tracks, over a pedestrian overpass, down some dark alleyways, literally. The Maps app sometimes has a good sense of humor. And by the time we got to the hotel, we were thinking to ourselves, you know, this train leaves at 7:50 in the morning. It's like 1 o'clock now. For us to get there, it's going to be really stressful. We should get a cab and make sure that we get there on time. So when we got to the hotel, we asked the person at the front desk, who spoke very, very little English. And, of course, we didn't speak any... What country were we in? Ukraine?
Ukrainian.
We didn't speak any Ukrainian. I'm sorry. It sounded terrible, but... it's a whirlwind bunch of adventures here. We basically just got the point across that we would like a cab to be meeting us tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. And then we conked out pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing that we never saw daylight in Lviv, Ukraine. We were in this unexplainably busy train station at night. Went to a interesting hotel just to get some rest so that we could make it to this train we had booked. And we were up while it was still dark. It was really interesting.
In fact, we got up earlier than anticipated and realized, you know, we can make it. We can make it easily walking back to the train station. We know the way. And also, there's another thing we hadn't anticipated, and that's that we didn't have enough cash for the cab, and that could be rather awkward. At least we assumed we didn't have enough cash, because you had already used cash to buy the train ticket. We only got so much. So we went downstairs, got all our stuff, and the same woman was there. It was dark in the reception desk. It's like she slept there or something. And I tried to tell her. I said, no taxi, no, you know, and there was some kind of back and forth going on. It was clear that she was having difficulty either understanding me or agreeing to that. And that's when we realized that she had maybe stayed up all night just to make sure we got our cab, or maybe she stays up there all the time. But the fact of the matter was, we couldn't cancel this cab. It was a big deal, and there was a taxi either on the way or right outside. And we were trying so hard to get out of getting a taxi because we knew we could make it there easily, and we didn't want the awkwardness of not having enough cash or talking to the guy and explaining where to go. And so, you know, it kind of unfolded in a weird way because it was like a nightmare. We were forced into a taxi. And not only that, there was a lot of confusion as to where that taxi was going.
Yeah, he had to take a different route. I'm getting nervous. I'm not sure if I have enough money. I have no idea. There's no logos. There's no light on the top of the cab. This guy looks like he's an ex-policeman or something.
Well,
I don't know.
Yeah, but he was also convinced he was taking us to the airport.
Yeah, that's right. It made no sense that, you know, he, I think, had been given instructions, but it wasn't clear where we were going, either from her when she was requesting
it. We never told her we were going to the train station. We just said we wanted a taxi. She must have assumed we were going to the airport, but we couldn't tell the guy. We were trying to say train station, railway, nothing was clicking, and he was driving. And I was just afraid we were going to wind up at some airport in Lviv, Ukraine, without any way to get out of it and missing our train. So once again, my train book came to the rescue because it has a picture of a train on the front cover. So I took it out of my bag, held it up, and said, there. And that's when it clicked. That's when he got it. And that's when he started driving towards the train station.
Yeah. So this little tiny sedan with tinted windows and huge language barriers ferried us over, and we quickly looked for the platforms, and I actually ended up with a little extra change.
Yeah,
so
we had enough money to pay the cab after all.
Yeah, it was so very cheap. It was affordable, and we used that change to buy these little sort of fried pastries with like mincemeat and a soda, and that was our treat getting on this train.
You don't know what's in these things. You just point to them.
I just pointed. She microwaved it right there on the platform, and all of a sudden we had a snack for this train ride.
And, you know, that's the point in traveling where you can't say, does this have, glutamates or whatever? You know,
no MSG.
You know, you can't be too particular about these things, because if you are, you're not going to get anything, and it's going to be very confusing, even more confusing than the kinds of things that we already go through. So, it was great to have that on the train. And this train ride took us to that small little Polish town that got us over the border. We're over the border now. We made it to Poland.
And I don't know if you want to describe it the same way. I would note this as a smoky train station, very similar to the one we saw in Chisinau in Moldova. They are electric trains, but the boilers for hot water and heat are all coal. And they have absolutely no qualms about burning this stuff inside the train station. Mm-hmm. And I honestly feel like we were in the 1930s or the 20s. I mean, just way back, maybe even the 19th century, in this smoky station that you could feel. It's like a sour acid on the back of your throat, of these very fine particulates and so on. And as we were getting on the train, getting ready to hand over our tickets and so on, with our snacks, and we had a very funny interaction with the conductor who was going to take our tickets inevitably. You were digging around.
Oh, that's right. I couldn't find my passport. I was really freaking out. I was getting on the train. My passport's not in my usual pocket. See, I keep things in various pockets. My cash is always in one place, credit cards in another, weapons and passport. You know, various. You know where things are. And it wasn't where it was supposed to be. So I'm freaking out. Did I leave it at the hotel? Because they ask you for your passport at every hotel you stay at.
Which was, like, really concerning, given the communication difficulties we had had.
Would I have to go back there and try and get a passport back from this one? I mean, you know, it's the kind of thing where you have to basically put your freaking out on hold. So fortunately, I have another passport, so I was able to use my backup American passport.
Yeah.
And, keep my cool that way. So, I just found it where that was supposed to be, in a different compartment, showed that, got on the train, but now I had to deal with the real issue: where the hell is my European passport? It was in a different pocket, and the pants I wear have so many pockets, things can get lost within them sometimes. I found things in my pants that, after searching, it doesn't matter. The point is, it's complicated, and sometimes things get confused, but we got on the train and we made our way over the border to the small Polish town whose name I'll never be able to pronounce, but we still had to get a ticket to Wrocław, which is much further west in Poland and closer to Berlin. And we figured, you know, instead of going up to Warsaw, this would be a quicker way to get to our destination. And so when we arrived, which was only about an hour-long trip or so, we went into this rather small train station, but it was a modern train station. And of course, you know, we didn't speak Polish, and they didn't really speak English. So I just waited on a line, which got very, very long. People just started waiting on this massively long 25-person line to get tickets. And it was my turn, and I just went up and said, Wrocław. And that was all I needed to say.
There were a couple things just to reiterate. When you do this, a lot of times people will speak their native language at you.
Yes.
And you have to listen. You can't maintain that, you know, oh, no, I don't understand. No, just let them tell you what they're telling you and try to pick up what they're saying. Sometimes if you use gestures too, you know, we wanted two tickets, but we also wanted second class. So you got to know which one you're talking about, and that kind of stuff. If you just are patient, you can actually end up communicating with them, reassure them that you follow what they're saying just with nods and gestures. And another a common thing is that they'll highlight the important information for you. They'll use a highlighter, they'll know, and label it so you know when you're looking at your ticket exactly what is what at the times, and then you're basically verifying it as you purchase it.
Right, right. We got the ticket to, you know, I was just hoping that I said it right. I didn't get a ticket to Warsaw. I said Wrocław. It was easy to understand. We looked at the ticket, and it was correct, and we were able to get on that train shortly afterwards and head to our final destination for that day, which was one hop away from Berlin. So everything seemed just great at this point until we got to Wrocław and then tried to immediately buy a train ticket for the next day to Berlin. Again, we ran into this thing where you ask for something and they just say no, you can't have that. The woman that was at the ticket desk there just threw her arms up in despair, as if, you know, she's sick of being asked for trains to Berlin. She said no trains, which seemed really hard to believe because, you know, it's two fairly big cities. There should be a connection between the two, and she's telling us no trains. My train book said there were trains. The map shows there's a connection between the two places. Fortunately, most major train stations in big cities not only have ticket windows, but they have what I consider to be counseling booths, where you go in and you sit down with a representative and they work something out with you.
They're like a reservation office, I think is the official term.
Fine, whatever they want to call it, you know, but it was very therapeutic, and we waited on a line there. And our number was called, but then it turned out that person didn't speak English, but there was a person with a Union Jack flag next to her, and that indicates that person speaks English, so we waited for that person. And again, my train book came in handy because I was able to point to a particular train and said, there's a train from Wrocław to Berlin. We'd like to make a reservation there. I didn't say that the other woman said we couldn't do it because I didn't want to give her an out. I just said, we want to make a reservation on this train. And she said, okay, and she tapped a whole bunch of items. She said, "Yeah, I'm going to put you on this train because you'll have more time to make a connection. You'll wind up on the same train in the end, but sometimes this other train, which comes from a faraway place, is late." Basically doing all these calculations that train people do. It's amazing. So she gave us our tickets, and when she gave us the tickets, I said, "Yeah, the other person said this was impossible, so I just want to thank you very much." She was happy that I was giving her superhuman powers by saying that. And we had our final link.
Yeah, we've had similar experiences in Sweden and in other places where these reservation people, their comprehensive knowledge of the system can be so invaluable when you just have a cursory idea of how it works, you know, fundamentally. But this made it a real success and got us into that area.
Yes, absolutely. That got us to Berlin. The train, both Ukraine and Poland have high-speed lines now. They have modern trains that are very impressive, much better than the last time I traveled in either country. It's incredible to see infrastructure actually being funded and developed, something we really should try back in the States. It would really make a huge difference. When you're able to get from one place to another quickly, that would be that just makes it a lot more fun, a lot more productive.
Yeah, and it was interesting in these towns, like Roll Claw, places we've never heard of, wouldn't ordinarily go. There was businesses, American businesses, and a lot of modern stuff going on, as well as traditional and tourists. We had a great meal at a very traditional restaurant with all kinds of fatty meats and tried different cheeses. And
it was a bar. It was a bar, but the guy who ran the bar was really proud of the dishes he made, and we wound up ordering everything on the menu. There's like seven dishes, but they were all, you know, really, really good, you know, small stuff that that really filled you up.
I would call it like Polish tapas, kind of. It was definitely like that, and we had a really good time. Lots of people. That's the best. When you go to a place that's really casual, but that has a lot of life and a lot of local people enjoying themselves, and we really felt we stayed out as late as we could, in fact, until a lot of the transit was closing down, and then we obviously had to get back to very quickly to get rest and make our train the next day.
Right, and we fortunately stayed at a hotel directly across the street from the train station, which is always a good idea. We got a very good deal on that hotel. We were talking like $33 or something crazy like that. And then we were able to simply walk across the street the next morning, get our train, and make it to Berlin. And that's pretty much where we're going to have to leave it, because we're out of time. And we have places to go here in Iceland, which you'll hear about in the future. And next week, we'll be back live in the studio talking about what happened to us in Berlin and in London. There's some stories there as well. And hey, maybe we can even talk to some of our listeners, take some phone calls. In the meantime, though, you guys can write to us, otw@2600.com. for Off the Wall, and tell us your thoughts, feelings, questions, ideas, that kind of thing. Always great having these fun adventures and taking listeners with us, and I understand listeners enjoy it as well. Well, some do.
Oh, yes, and if you've been to one of these places, if you have something to share, something you hear in what we've said, we, as E said, we always want to hear those comments, and when we're back, we'll maybe even take some calls.
For Off the Wall, this is Emmanuel.
And Kyle.
Have a good night. We'll be right back.
Yes, yes, kids. Finn Miller with you on Finn's Revolution right until the 9 p.m. hour. Tonight we have the great Amy Annell singing a song from the Golden Globe nominated soundtrack to the Billboards movie, and also the great Sarah McQuaid. Coming up. Yeah, singer-songwriter Amy Annell right there, covering some towns. Van Zandt, originally from her record The Great unraveling. And now, of course, from the movie Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Golden Globe nominated soundtrack she's on. It's the beautiful closer of this. And yeah, I think we're going to hear a little something else right now from Amy, who's going to be on the air with us in a few moments right here. Amy Annell, WUSB Stony Brook.
Somewhere high, some old hall, stomping on the bog like a free, stream of light. My heart jumps straight to you tonight.
Dream that's where you'll find.